Track 11. Writing a poem for Norfolk. Nick Aitchison, Norfolk Wildlife Trust Ambassador on the Stanzas of Life.
The natural world reads like a poem, at least to me, for every time I step outside, I'm met by the musical, evocative names of fungi, plants and animals. Here on my walk today are blue tits and wood bluets. Here are gold crests and the hard gold eyes of sparrowhawks. Here too are the sharp green winter leaves of alexanders and the sad dun stalks of summer cocks, footgrass, and on and on and on. 1,000 species, many I will never know, on every walk. These are the words, the basic building blocks of poems and of ecosystems. But then comes grammar. Each time I walk, the birds and mammals, fish and fungi that I see are different. Even if I follow the same route, mobile species are in different places, doing different things and, this is crucial, interacting with one another differently. One day, a young male sparrowhawk pelts along the path towards me, gold gaze locked on a panicked chaffinch. He almost slams into my face, but banks hard right and folds himself into a wall of blackthorn. The chaffinch, this time, is spared. The next day, the little hawk is flapping lazily high above the stand of poplars by the river, choosing his next move. And the next, a charcoal puff of feathers decorates the path beside a bloodied orange bill. He made his kill, a blackbird. Life moves on. One stanza at a time. As for the words and stanzas, they are endless. The poem itself, an epic, dwarfing altogether the Odyssey, Mahabharata, and Nibelungenlied. For it began almost 4 billion years ago, when, somehow, somewhere, compounds began to replicate themselves, forming what we now call RNA. Almost halfway through the poem of life, two things happened, which changed the narrative's direction for eternity. A little more than 2 billion years ago, the first undisputed evidence of photosynthesis appeared. From this point, life forms have been capable of using sunlight and carbon dioxide to acquire energy, releasing oxygen as a byproduct. Around the same time, eukaryotic cells appeared. Eukaryotic cells have organelles, internal structures, including a nucleus, a command center, holding instructions in the form of DNA. A little under 1 billion years ago, multicellular organisms. This change allowed the evolution of all the plants, the fungi, and the animals we see. So, 4 billion years, 5 colossal extinction events, 6 if you include the one we have unleashed ourselves, which is barely getting started, and more millions of species than science has begun to calculate, all locked in the tragic, triumphant poem we know as life. Where in the poem do humans sit? Not, I regret to tell you, as the heroes of the piece. No, not by far.
Taxonomically,
we sit in the animal kingdom, and within that, in the chordate phylum, meaning we have a spinal cord. Within that, we are firmly mammals. Among mammals, we are clearly in the order primates, within which the family Hominidae include 4 genera: Pongo, 3 species of orangutan; Pan, 2 species of chimpanzee; Gorilla, 2 species of gorilla; and Homo, 1 extant human species, through the genes of 2 others acquired through interbreeding, swim through our DNA. In life's glorious epic poem, we play a complex role. At this point, we might readily be the villains. Systematically, wherever we have roamed across the globe, we have unpicked the connecting threads of life's great story. Looking no further than the UK, in the Stone Age and the Bronze Age, we felled the forests on a monumental scale, changing a wooded island to a farmed one. Having filled the landscape with our livestock and our crops, we killed the animals which threatened them. We killed the wolves, the bears, the beavers, the lynxes, and the aurochs. We drained the wetlands too on an enormous scale. And for good measure, we ate the cranes. Every single one. Then, in the Victorian era, we got our second wind. Not content with having altogether changed the landscape and killed off the larger mammals, we went to war with predators. The white-tailed eagle was extinguished by our guns. The hen harrier was harried from all its lowland breeding sites, including Norfolk. The pine marten and the wildcat were driven to the Scottish Highlands, having previously been widespread and abundant. The red kite and the polecat had also once been common. They evaded persecution only in the rugged wilds of Wales. Buzzards and ravens were wiped out everywhere in the lowlands too. Were wiped out. Lazy grammar. We wiped them out. If we were characters in the epic poems of our history, we would be villains, laying waste to cultures, landscapes and their people. But epic poems end with new beginnings, with redemptions. In the epic poems of life upon our peerless planet, we have had a shaky start and earned ourselves some enemies. But we hold the secrets of the future in our hands. We cannot write the story of biodiversity, for that is far beyond our scope. But we can write a future for Norfolk, for the UK, and the planet in which biodiversity has space to thrive, to write brave and bold new stanzas in its story. As Norfolk Wildlife Trust, we have recently launched a strategy for our future, a brave new stanza in our 100 years of history. It marks a huge step up in our ambition for our county's wildlife and wild landscapes, through which, with countless partners, including you, we will see the words and grammar of Norfolk's biodiversity restored to abundance everywhere, so that the poem of the natural world in Norfolk can forever write itself.